And welcome to Double Cross Radio. We are live on UCY.tv, and we are here every Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific. Our URL for the show is www.ucy.tv/XX. I am your host, Drew Lamb. Chuck Horton is not with me tonight. He is on the road. He had some business to take care of up in Soviet-occupied Portlandia. He might call in. We have open phones tonight, so feel free to call in if you have any questions for our guests or if there's another subject that you'd like to talk about. The call-in number is 1-718-717-8296. And I'd like to give a shout-out to our listeners in chat. It's been a tough hour. Audio was down on UCY, and I was just doing a sound check, and we have audio. And looking at the comments in the chat, it looks like you guys can hear us loud and clear. Let me know if you can't. I'd like to say hi to Cracker, Hecty, Hopper, I Am Lone Frog, Joe Friday, Jules, Keeper of the Republic, a.k.a. Miner Dave, a regular guest on our show, Chuck and Vincent, Captain Gringo, and Road Dog. So you guys, thanks for tuning in tonight. I have a very special guest. My guest tonight is Travis Boyd. Travis Boyd is one of the owners of an internet service provider called Wallowa Valley Networks, and they operate up in northeastern Oregon in Wallowa County, and they provide a broadband internet service to 500 square miles of rural country in one of the most beautiful areas that I've ever visited in my entire life. And and also it is the territory of the Nez Perce Indians, and is the place where Old Chief Joseph is buried there by Wallowa Lake. Travis, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Drew.
So I came in contact with you because I read an essay that you had written and posted on Jeffrey Tucker's Liberty Me, if I recall.
Yep.
And then Gabriel had shared it over to his page, and I read that, and it really resonated with me. I felt instantly sorry for you too, because I knew that this type of thing was going to happen. We'll get into this as we start talking about your business. But this is one thing that Chuck and I always try to get people to understand when they say there ought to be a law about this or a law about that, is that there are unintended consequences.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, you take this net neutrality stuff. You know, the supporters of this go, well, you know, this is just going to make things more fair, and it's going to, it's going to, you know, make sure that free speech is, it's going to level the playing field, and it doesn't. It bulldozes the playing field, and wrecks people's business. So, I'll pass the mic over to you and just tell us about your business and what you guys do, and what's happened with this net neutrality and also this issue that's come up with the state of Oregon as well.
Okay, thanks, Drew. Kind of go back over for those who haven't read the article, although it took off more than I ever thought it would, just for basically typing out my frustrations at 2 a.m. While I'm sitting here managing the ISP. All about 6 years ago, two IT friends and I found ourselves back in our home county, and there was no internet service out here. So we were like, hey, you know, that's a fantastic business opportunity. Something's not there that people want. So we pooled a couple grand and bought some of these data radios from this company called Ubiquiti. And we built out our own ISP. It uses a technology called fixed wireless, which is it's different from mobile wireless. This is a sort of a dish that's attached to the side of your house that points at a tower, and that the tower is linked back to the internet at large. And using this, we can cheaply build out our own completely independent telecommunications network that covers, you know, like you said, hundreds of square miles. And, you know, so we've gradually just been growing it and growing it over the last couple of years. You know, ate rice and beans for the first couple of years just to pull it off. And it's been quite the adventure. You know, we don't advertise, just word of mouth. You know, satisfied customers tell other people, and they give us a call, and we go out and hook them up. And you know, we don't take government money. Don't need government money to do it. Don't use public rights of way, you know, because we don't have any wires in the air. So it's up until the network neutrality thing, it's been a very lightly regulated business space. And that's another reason I got into it. I try and steer clear, being self-employed, I try and steer clear of overly regulated spaces. You just can't.
Same here. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a one or two man shop, you just, the regulation usually will kind of price you out of that.
You go from being an entrepreneur to being a bookkeeper a person who just fills out forms all day.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, using radio, there's still a few forms I've got to file a couple times a year with the FCC, but it's like a one page thing, you know? Well, up until the Network Neutrality Act. So basically that's talking about unintended consequences. You know, it wasn't directly targeted at us or anything like that, but it's just, as a small businessman, you just sometimes get stepped on when bigger fish, you know, they're chasing after bigger fish. And that was, that's basically what happened here. Like I said, we don't use any public resources, but this Network Neutrality Act, with the FCC trying to basically figure out a way to like get a regulatory handle of some sort on the internet, even though it's growing kind of, it's developing faster than they can really get a handle on. They're trying. And what they chose to do was reclassify all U.S. internet providers as public utilities, which basically turns our private company into a public company, which basically means it's not ours anymore. you know, we're just a two-man shop here, entirely self-built. And so that's, you know, as a freedom-minded entrepreneur, that's kind of a deal breaker for me. So
what a lot of people don't realize is that when you have these utilities and they're regulated, usually they have a some sort of government granted monopoly, like mm-hmm. say you know, a company that provides water to a city, and so there will be an agreement entered into, and they provide the service. Or, you know, in a lot of cities there's only one trash company or something like that, where there should be multiple things. I don't think that trash service is really the same as providing water. Let's say there's only like one river coming through or a creek coming through an area. Mm-hmm. but that's not the case with a business like yours. You're totally subject to competition.
Oh yeah. In fact, there's little ISPs like mine all over the place. WISPs, wireless ISPs. You know, for anybody listening, you just do a search for a WISP. There's probably one operating in your area. You might not know about them. They might kind of play it low key, but they're almost always there. In the rural areas, and we're basically that other option. We're the you know, when they talk, the FCC talks about, and the government talks about, oh, there's not enough competition in the internet space, monopolies are running roughshod over customer rights, consumer rights, and stuff like that. Well, yeah, there is an option. It's us. You just don't hear about us because we don't have a lot of political clout. And talking about a point you made earlier, we're not. Larger telecoms these days in the U.S. are essentially part of the national security state. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're basically an extension of it,
right.
And we're completely out of that. You know, we're little completely independent networks doing our thing, building out in rural areas. So we just don't have a seat at that table. We can't afford a seat at that table.
Right, and you created something where there was nothing.
Right. Yeah, we it's. Using the government funded or the government supplied money paradigm, that is just even with that, it's not cost effective for larger ISPs to build out here.
Right.
Because of the other thing we can do is we're not just avoiding public rights of way with the wireless stuff. We're able to make deals with private people. Like we've got stuff on people's barns and people's roofs and people's sheds, providing covers to little areas, you know. So it's just, if you're more flexible like that, you can make local deals. You can actually make it work out, even if you're just chasing three or four homes that are back in this clump of trees or something like that.
Right. And it's a very mountainous area where you're at. I mean, the Wawas are like the Alps of Oregon. It's a beautiful country there. So it has to be kind of tricky to get the signals going where you want them to go. It's not like you could put a plow on a train and run a wire.
No, not that would be. Yeah, we've got stuff on 7,000-foot mountain peaks. We've got a really nice a solar relay covering the Wallawa Lake Basin. If people want to get a really nice. If you want to see a picture of probably the most perfect glacial moraine in the world, just Google Wallawa Lake.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. But it's, you know, we couldn't get a line of sight on that from any of the towns. So we had to put a little 30-foot tower up on the eastern moraine and a couple solar panels and batteries. And that got us about 150 customers, I think.
Incredible. Wow. Yeah. And so do you have many employees?
No, there's just two of us. It's myself and one other guy. So we've got, you know, like I said, we just passed 500 square miles of coverage. And that's most of the county at this point. And yeah, it's completely possible. We're not too overtaxed or anything like that.
Right, right. So how has this net neutrality affected you, or how is it going to affect you?
Well, yeah, I was just, it actually got passed 3-2 while I was on the plane down to Anarchapulco, which was fantastic for anybody who.
Yeah, to our listeners who might not be familiar with Anarchapulco, that was an event that Jeff Berwick put on down in Acapulco, Mexico. And Jeff's been on our show, I don't know, four times or so. Jeff has come on to talk about the economy, trading gold and silver, expatriation, Galt's Gulch down in Chile, and we'll get into that stuff a little later on. So how was that? What was it like down there? I really wanted to go.
It was great. You know, it was less like a conference and more like 300 friends getting together. And it should have lasted a couple of weeks, because I barely had time to say hi and introduce myself to not even half the people that were there. But yeah, it was fantastic. I learned a lot. And there, you know, there should be some good video popping up on YouTube here over the next week or so.
Well, I like what Jeff is trying to do. He's trying to get more anarcho-capitalists, voluntarists. That's the nice way that we describe ourselves, the non-scary way that we describe ourselves, to aggregate down there and form a community. And he talks about how it's perfectly safe down there, and there's more entrepreneurial opportunities and less competition, and that it's not nearly as dangerous as everybody says. We had James Guzman on recently, and he's down there in Mexico. And Kyron Pearson is a friend of mine. He's down there in Mexico. And these guys just, you know, make it sound like it's great. I mean, sure, there's some stuff going on, but I think if you're not in competition with the U.S. government sponsored drug cartels, then you know, you're not going to have any issues.
And that's, you know, it's just like any country. You know, there's bad parts of any country, and there's awesome parts of any country. Yeah. And you know, when I was there, I really didn't have any trouble. You know, it's kind of the basic operating principle. If you go to a foreign country, just be nice, try to understand the language, and don't be a jerk, and that gets you a long, long ways.
Right. Yeah, I think learning the language is critical. I'm pretty rusty on my Spanish. I'd have to practice up. I studied 2 years of high school Spanish. Then I was fluent. I remember when I went to Thailand, I couldn't speak Thai, maybe five words of Thai, but there were shops where people spoke Spanish, and so I just looked for the signs that said "Se habla español," and I'd go to those places because I could communicate. Kyron was I he was on Anarchast recently with Jeff Berwick, and he was talking about how being able to speak Spanish just opens up opportunities for him.
It unlocks so many countries for you. So Spanish, English are probably the first two. And then maybe, I think he was saying maybe Chinese and Russian after that, these days.
So we'll get back to expatriation in a moment here. So back to this net neutrality. So this goes into effect, and it sounds like it could affect all kinds of elements of how you do business, especially if you grow.
So, and this came simultaneously with an Oregon tax issue as well from the state of Oregon. So it's kind of the straw that made me go, okay, that's, it's time to think about things here. But the network neutrality thing, it's, it was put forward, it was pushed forward by consumer pressure, because of one principal issue, which was, it's a little bit technical, but Netflix and Comcast were having a disagreement over something called peering, which is basically the point where they're the network that Netflix uses to distribute stuff connects to the Comcast network, and there was some money issues and some legal issues that they were discussing. But this is something that happens all the time. Peering agreements are, it's a sort of a legal agreement between two companies. We send you this traffic and you send us that traffic. And it's always been worked out before in the past by the free market. You come to an agreement, money changes hands. Okay. But because Netflix, it's just changed the picture of internet operations so drastically. Now they're probably, during our peak time in the evening, there's 70% of our traffic is Netflix. And yeah, it's really changing the business model a lot. But we can cope with it. But a lot of these larger providers were having to do some upgrades that hit their bottom line. And
So your service provides speeds up to 26 Mbps, is that right?
yeah, 26 megabits. And that beats the FCC's definition of broadband that they just rolled out. They just upped the definition to 25 megs. And having gone to 26 megs a couple weeks before that, that was somewhat satisfying. Because the local telco only goes up to 24. So technically, we're the only broadband provider in Wallowa County now.
Incredible.
But the big one for me was the reclassification as a public utility. Being a self-made company and, taking pride in that basically, the way I've phrased it to some people, it's kind of like somebody walking up and taking the title to your car and then patting the dashboard and saying, "Hey, take good care of my car and don't drive it too fast or on bumpy roads," and it brings into my, okay, so should we invest any more in upgrading our network, since it's not technically ours anymore? It's more of an extension of the public internet as a whole. It's it starts to get into an ethical ethical questions about how do I want to even, is there the space for this sort of entrepreneurship in this country is narrowing and narrowing and narrowing. And so that was the principal thing. There's some questions too about the further developments. The FCC has basically rolled this out with a lot of conditions attached to it, saying if you're a small provider, we won't impose the heavy duty stuff, the price and wage controls, the line sharing requirements. Because wireline companies that were already under this classification, they've actually got to have their network open so that competitors can buy access through their network to the end customer. Because you're a public utility, you're using the public space. You have to give So being a privately built network, that would have really bit. So they haven't gone to that stage yet. But if you dig into the FCC's documents and you look at the administration that's shaping up in the 2016-2017 election cycle, I'm expecting that sort of thing to happen strongly enough that we're starting to take, we're starting to have to look at adjusting our business model to deal with that. Insofar as our business will still exist, the Oregon tax thing and this in combination is probably actually going to make us, I mean, we're not going to go out of business, but we're going to have to do something, maybe a work with a municipal broadband project or turn the company into a nonprofit, as much as leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But it's all gotten rather complicated, and entrepreneurship and complication are not really compatible in my
well opinion. Yeah, or government interference.
Yeah. Government created complication, right? Regular complication. I can deal with technical complications and customer issues all day long, but it's
not like your customers are complaining and saying that you're mistreating them and there needs to be laws to regulate what you're doing. I mean, this is all voluntary. You didn't have to create this. Your customers do not have to subscribe to it. They do have alternatives. They could have a dial up, right?
They could have dial-up. They could have satellite in most areas.
Yeah.
And a lot of our customers would have access to DSL, which out here is Frontier. Mm-hmm. But with the technology we've got and the speed that we can, if you give us a call 2 days later, a radio's on your roof and you're hooked up, we can just blow them out of the water.
Right.
And that's just this generation of technology.
You invented a better mousetrap.
Right. Yeah. The generation of equipment that we're actually just getting into the shop would let us do actual 100 meg to the home service. That's comparable to fiber.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. It seems to me that a lot of these issues that are covered by the net neutrality were already taken care of by the Telecommunications Act of 1994, and that
94 or 96.
I can't remember, but that allowed small little telecom companies to set up shop, and they mm-hmm. would use the existing infrastructure that was mm-hmm. built by MCI, Sprint, Ma-Bell. I'm just trying to think of all the
AT&T,
some of the early players, right? And so, in that case, I mean, even locally here, I deal with an ISP who also provides phone service. And I know that part of their network is that we use was built out by the city of Ashland and the Ashland mm-hmm. Fiber Network. And then
a great network. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in another town where I do business, they're using Charter's network. And for mm-hmm. their phone service, they're using CenturyLink, and so these are all things that are covered by that Telecommunications Act, where mm-hmm. and I don't like the sound of that, but a lot of those companies, they had government subsidies and
right.
given right of ways, and they were given advantages that a business like yours would never be able to have.
And yeah, it's just out of reach for us. Yeah.
Right, right. So that's why that act was passed, and that allowed for more competition. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is, like, when I'm dealing with infrastructure, I purchase service through them because it's good, and mm-hmm. also the service is better. I get and the pricing is better too. And I mean, I actually deal. I have like a personal representative, or if mm-hmm. I need to, I could actually show up there and talk to a person. I'm not dealing with a kindergartner who's got a telephone in India or something like that. I actually have somebody to deal with. And if we have an issue on site where we're trying to get service in a commercial building, it's tricky. We've got experts that come out to try to work it out, and it's good. I prefer to work with the small telecom than working with the huge corporate, you know, CenturyLink guys who just send telemarketers at me all the time. So,
and that's the cool thing about this technology too. Well, I mean, a lot of the decentralization technologies that they're showing up in the last year or two, it really lets local providers, whether you're an ISP or in some cases little power cooperatives and local power companies, actually pull this off. The pace of technological development has gotten to the point where it's really enabling a lot of these business opportunities. You know, for example, if somebody's not doing a wireless ISP like this down in that area, which I'm not sure they are. I think the closest one is up in Roseburg, the Roseburg area.
Mm-hmm.
You're down in Ashland, and Ashland has a great fiber network. But if you go a little ways out of town, it probably stops.
Yeah.
Somewhat close to the city limits.
Yeah.
So you could, you know, an entrepreneur could pick up a wholesale fiber connection in town and beam it out to a mountaintop tower and cover a couple valleys, and you know, the equipment's cheap enough that you can, you know, if you pick up 30, 40 customers pretty quick, you're off and running.
Right. Yeah. And you have to negotiate, you know, your wholesale mm-hmm. purchase. So
yeah.
It's not like you're taking something that's subsidized by the taxpayers.
Yeah, it's a private agreement between you and a bigger telecom. You buy resellable access from them, and then you turn around and resell it. And it's just a private agreement. You know, we do something similar here. We've got a private agreement called interconnect agreements with Frontier, and it specifies, you know, we're going to buy X from you, and if you want to buy stuff from us, this is the rate. It's just a completely, you know, between two companies. Legal private agreement, and that's mm-hmm. that's how the internet's developed so far, and it works great, and the government doesn't need to get involved.
So are they going to tell you things like how much you can charge, what kind of service you have to provide, quality of service? Are they going to regulate how much you have to pay employees, things like that?
So far, the quality of service is the big one.
Uh-huh.
The price control and the wage caps, I am fully expecting those to come out in the 2017 timeframe. They just published the full thing today. It's 400 pages worth of tightly packed black and white, and I'm just going through it line by line. To try and get an idea of what the time frame is for a lot of these more intrusive regulations, but this, yeah, it's just changed. It's just kind of taken the wind out of my sails as far as entrepreneurship in the U.S.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I can understand completely. I mean, just with my businesses, the regulations just. Drive me up a tree. And so my latest business that I started a couple of years ago is an aquaponics farm, but
oh, really?
I've designed it.
Guess what?
This
is crazy.
I've designed it in such, I've designed the business, and I continue to design the business in such a way that I try to interact with government as little as possible.
Yeah.
So for example, I have no interest in being certified organic. You know, my slogan is beyond organic. All of my stuff has to be fish safe. I'm very, very picky. And I actually, there's things like coconut core that is in a lot of, organic, produce operations, you know, where they use it as a grow media. I won't even use it because most of the sources I've tested were radioactive, but it's considered, organic and okay, but I don't consider it okay. And so, I know that the USDA helps to create those standards, even though the Oregon TILF implements them, but just because of that, because the USDA is involved in that, I see it as a dangerous road to go down. You know, you've got a USDA that's steered by Monsanto telling small farmers how they're going to operate. You know, I don't want any part of it. And my customers don't care. I tell them exactly what I just said.
Yeah,
And they
just be
completely
transparent.
agree with me. They'll come, they visit my shop. I have an urban farm. It's all in a warehouse, and
That's
they
cool.
visit it. They see what's going on. They know how I grow things, and they're cool with it. And that's it. That's how it should be. And so, my customer certifies that my product is good. And
Yeah, satisfied customers are the best certification you can get.
yes, and my healthy fish say, yes, everything in here is good for us.
That's really cool. I'd actually like to come visit your operation. There's some interesting synergies in the Freedom community going on these days.
Absolutely. Well, basically what we're trying to do is create more competitive communities, communities that will work better and create happier, wealthier people than this current system that we're having to suffer. And I'm an agorist. That's almost the same as being a voluntarist or an anarcho-capitalist,
Maybe a
but
further step beyond,
yeah, but agorism, for our listeners is basically where you're taking libertarian principles and you're putting them into action in the free market, typically black market, and the Silk Road epitomized agorism. That said, one of the things that, talking about this organic deal, like for example, in the aquaponics industry, you could feed your fish, food that was derived from GMO crops, and yet you're using the waste from your fish to grow your crops, and they can be organic, So I don't really see how that's organic. I try to produce as much of my own feed as I can through composting with red worms and black soldier flies. And I know I'm
Oh,
taking us
yeah, soldier flies are.
off topic here, but by just like
Well,
shunning the government implemented standard,
yeah,
I'm
the regulation is.
I'm creating a different standard that's actually a higher standard,
And
and I.
if you buy into their regulatory system, that's sort of, it's making a deal with the devil. That's that
Right.
you're stepping into their arena, and even trying to get certified in a sense is kind of compromising the spirit of what you're trying to do.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to be subjected to it, and I don't want people, coming into my shop and telling me what to do. Bottom line, and I mean the Oregon Tilth is a private entity. However, they are closely aligned with government, so I see them as a government entity, and I don't want to deal with it. I also engage in real estate work, and that's highly regulated, super regulated, to the point where, well, my boss is the government, with that kind of work, and
They
it's
own all the land, yeah.
It's a cruel, well, it's just absolutely immoral to have to obtain a license to work. It's not right at all. But this all happens when people say there ought to be a law, dot dot dot, and there you go, and then things aren't as good. And I mean, you're providing an excellent service. When we first moved to Ashland, Oregon, from Seattle, Washington. I went from a place where we had, adequate internet. I mean, this was in the late '90s, to a place where the city hadn't finished the Ashland fiber network yet, and we moved into a brand new building. It was a condo project, and well, it turned out that they hadn't even run a wire to our unit. So, and then we finally got a wire, but for some reason, I couldn't get an internet connection because there was too much static on the line. And so we had, and so, and the phone company said, we can't help you. And we had a small internet business at the time, and that was why we went to Ashland, because of this fiber network deal. But it turned out they hadn't brought the fiber over to our road yet,
Not yet.
and then we had this staticky phone connection, and so my modem would just hang up. And so I learned a programming language called CCL, and I hacked my modem, and I made some tweaks to it. I did a bunch of research. I've been doing some programming since I was 12 years old. So I did some tweaks and I got that thing up and running, and I got it to where it would stay connected, and I had, you know, pretty good speeds at the time, and I made it work. But most people couldn't have done that. You know, they just, it wouldn't have happened there, and there was no alternative. So here you are, you're providing an excellent service where the big players, you know, aren't cutting it. And you're not immune to competition. You have no monopoly. You know,
Nope,
you
we
know,
don't.
you have to provide a good service, take care of your customers, and do it for a fair price.
Yeah, and price is king. And if you're not price competitive, your customers can and will drop you like a hot rock. So you've got to be on it. You've got to keep them. You got to keep folks happy. There's, the FCC was using the worry of, people are going to shape, people are going to throttle Netflix, and they'll mess with your connection and they'll the shenanigans. There's no room for shenanigans in a small business. Your customers, even if you were inclined to do that, which I'm not, your customers wouldn't permit it. They'd just jump ship. So it's sort of a self-regulating thing. Local small businesses, you're part of the community. You got to sit next to this guy if you go to the pub, you're not going to give him a hard time. So,
You're going to see these people at the grocery store. These are people in your community.
Yeah, these are my friends and fellow businessmen here. I'm not gonna.
You have to give people a fair shake. I know that's, you know, we live in a very, very small area, you know, semi-suburban, rural, you know, and that's how it is. You know, your reputation is everything. It's very important. So can you explain a little bit what's going on with the state of Oregon?
The state of Oregon. Well, this one's a little bit more complex. Essentially, there's a number of taxes that Comcast has been paying in various counties, mainly the metro counties in northwest Oregon, and they felt that they weren't really required to pay them, and this has been going back and forth legally for 5 or 6 years, I think, and they finally. The Comcast lawyers finally figured out that they did have a legal leg to stand on, and they weren't really subject to these taxes, and they made their case. There was sort of some behind the scenes political stuff going on, because a lot of the counties that had been collecting this tax money, usually if something's up for dispute, you might maybe put that money into escrow and wait before spending it until the decision's made, so you aren't faced with the situation. But they, a lot of these counties are so strapped, especially the PERS pension fund here in Oregon. This money went right back out the door in many cases. I think Multnomah County is the only one that maybe kept it in escrow, but even then, people aren't really sure whether the account's actually full or not. So politically, it's not really politically possible to give that money back. So the Oregon Supreme Court basically did some fancy legal footwork and got Comcast reclassified as a different type of company that was subject to these taxes, and did it retroactively, which is kind of messed up. But in order to do that, they had to lump all telecommunications providers in Oregon in with Comcast. So Comcast lost their case due to legal shenanigans, and the rest of us small guys got dragged in with them. And what that means is we're subject to this class of taxes called intangibles. Well, first of all, it makes us subject to, for property taxes, subject to central assessment by the state instead of locally. Usually your property taxes are done on a county by the county. They figure out, okay, you've got some stuff in the county right away and
And
it's
you're
worth
making
X.
tons of money with it,
Right. You're making tons of money. And so you should pay us some of that because you have buildings and stuff.
It's like, Don Finucci is your county commissioner.
Right. It'd be a shame if anything were to happen to those wires. So they intangibles are a class of taxes that cover things like brand recognition, customer loyalty, potential coverage area, stuff like that. That's so super vague and up in the air. There's no way to really feasibly figure this stuff out. So the state just sort of generates some numbers based on the demographics of the area and whatnot. And In Comcast's case, this amounted to, I think, around $500 million a year. And for us, there's a number of forms sitting on my business partner's desk over there that we're going to have to get filled out in the next couple weeks and turn in. And then we'll see how badly this hurts us. But if what Comcast is going through is any indication, it's going to be a bit of a bite. And this also has the effect of making it make zero sense for us to actually build anything.
Right.
You know, we were going to build some towers. We were going to do some upgrades and actually, you know, build out our privately owned plant. But now we're going to have to pay these centrally assessed taxes. So basically, it's.
Oh my gosh!
It's just
arbitrary.
Very arbitrary, and it's up to sort of the political winds. So this is the stuff. Now that this has been in place or put in place, it could change just like the FCC stuff. This could change at any time.
Right.
You know, a new administration rolls in, a new board of commissioners gets elected for the state. Boom! You know, you're, and as a small business, you've got to at least have some. You know, you got to be able to plan a couple years out and figure out how you're going to work. You can't plan. You can't strategize.
No, you have a risk that you can't even assess. You don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know what it is.
Yeah. So
it's unpredictable.
Yeah. So the money that we were going to use to upgrade our infrastructure and start actually rolling out some of this 100 meg gear. Now we got to set it aside and use it to pay off the state, or at least be ready to pay off the state. So completely the opposite of what actually needs to be happening.
Right. And this is, you know, you've been running your business and setting some money aside to reinvest,
right,
to grow your business. But now they want to take that from you. So you won't be able to grow the business as quickly.
Yeah, we roll most of it back in to upgrades. And
almost all entrepreneurs do. You know, almost everything goes back into the business. That's the way it works. People don't understand that. Just people usually think that entrepreneurs are just super rich and just
printing money. Yeah,
just sort of born with lots of money and stuff. It's really hard. I've had one full day off in 23 months. I work my ass off.
That Anarchapulco thing was the first time I've had that many days off in a row in 5 years.
I can completely relate.
Even that turned into a little bit of a workcation. The hotel Wi-Fi was somewhat subpar, and so there was another WISP guy down there who I ran into, and this other pretty cool software developer, and we ended up tuning up the hotel Wi-Fi.
Cool. Wow. So, did they give you a discount on your room?
They comped us on the meal plan.
Oh, excellent. Oh, that's great. Wow.
So, but yeah, they, you know, it's, oh boy, we could get into the expatriation side of things too.
Well,
later.
Yeah, let's go ahead. So you're thinking, instead of putting up with this, mm-hmm. You're thinking about bailing out. I've been thinking about bailing out for a long time. I've looked at Chile. I've looked at Uruguay. I've looked at Mexico. You know, I'm always looking at places to go, because I'm frustrated. I'm tired of trying to run a business in this country. Extremely frustrating, and I feel like I've got all these freeloaders that I'm carrying, you know, and a system that really thinks of me as an enemy, and is always doing stuff to try to mess me up and just keep me from providing services to my customers and living the life that I want to live and working hard, keeping my labor. The fruits of my labor, and you know, that's what I want from my life, and I don't go along with this socialist agenda, and we're definitely shifting into socialism, and a lot of people are very happy about it, but some of us aren't, and I don't want to participate in it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I won't speak directly for his motivations, but my dad's a medical doctor, and the ACA, the side effect of the ACA, to kind of look retroactively here, socialism wise, is to price out of the market a lot of these smaller private clinics and private practices where doctors actually take the Hippocratic Oath seriously.
Right.
And they're having to basically either retire or get themselves rolled into a larger hospital infrastructure.
Right.
So that's
as a potential consumer of medical service, I don't want to participate in that either.
Right.
You know,
you want to go to the guy who actually cares about your health. You know?
Yeah. And I don't want to give the government, you know, a bunch of my information, have it go into their database, you know? And
so they basically just did the same, you know, they've nationalized healthcare,
right,
especially the smaller. Now they're nationalizing telecom, especially the smaller, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. telecom was already somewhat mm-hmm. nationalized already, but they're sweeping up all the small independent providers now.
And what people need to understand is that this is what corporatism actually is. A corporatocracy is when corporations control the government. Corporatism is when government organizes labor and industry, and that's exactly mm-hmm. what's happening here. This is corporatism. This is based on Mussolini's business model.
They don't have to raise, and they'll put it. The big corps will put up a token resistance to the regulation, right. and they'll let the government take, you know, three steps forward and force them to take one step back, and the regulation raises high enough to wipe out the smaller guys, but the bigger guys can handle the regs because they've got a whole department to do that.
Right.
And then, just in the telecom space, like I told you, we're eating Frontier's lunch out here, and smaller providers like us all over the U.S. are gradually chewing into the edges of the big telecoms because we're just better.
Right.
And what's the easiest way to compete if you can't do it technically? Turn to your political angles.
Absolutely. So you've been looking at a project down in Chile called Fort Galt that's been put together by Gabriel Scheer and a few others.
Luke Crowley,
yes. Yeah. And I have been following that project for a little while since I've become Facebook friends with Gabriel Scheer, and so I've been interested in it because I was talking to Berwick, you know, when he'd come on the show about his Galt's Gulch project, and I was, you know, that was interesting, but it didn't look like it was really going to be quite the thing for me, you know. It was a little
too far north. Yeah, it was a little dry.
Yeah, and you know, it just looked like something you had to have some real big money to play, and it just wasn't quite fleshed out the way that I thought it could it could work for me. So I know that my co-host Chuck, he was looking seriously at it too.
And, yeah, I was. Boy, that's a. I was actually going to build the fixed wireless network to cover GGC. I'd lined up bandwidth from level 3 in Santiago. I was going to beam it to the top of the mountain broadcast it down in the valley. And I had had it pretty much a business plan written up and everything ready to go, and Ken just never got back to me on that.
I don't know Ken personally, but I've listened to the complaints about Ken. I've read about the
not knowing him personally, you can't directly judge, but you can look at somebody's performance and go, boy, I wouldn't want to do business with that guy.
Yeah, you're lucky on that, but maybe the investors would have made good on it and paid you whatever you were owed. I'd imagine they would have done that, and they'll probably get that project rolling. And you know, it sounded like they were knocking out the issues, but it's good to look to look at other things, you know. And so I've been looking at this Fort Galt, mm-hmm. and it looks like it's like a big lodge, you know, where you could have like-minded anarchists. Entrepreneurs can live and collaborate on projects and have some workspace and basically live the lifestyle that we'd like to live, which is to be able to do what we wish without infringing upon the rights of others. Operate our businesses without owners' regulations, but of course, I mean, you've got to deal with the Chilean government at some point with certain things, and so
nowhere's perfect, you know. But
right. So How did Fort Galt come onto your radar screen?
Oh, well, I'd started talking to Luke Crowley when he went to this project called Open Source Ecology. That's sort of a open source, sort of a research and development station in Missouri. It's kind of it's a farm endeavor, which is pretty cool. He'd gone through that, and so I messaged him online saying, "Hey, what was that like?" And we started talking, and I'd been looking at getting a space in the original Fort Galt idea, which was going to be sort of a capsule hotel, kind of like a Japanese capsule hotel, if you ever heard of one of those things. You got a teeny little space, just big enough to act as a lily pad. And so I was going to, get one of those and use that as just a way to get a foothold in Chile before, heading further south. So the GGC project ran into the rocks, Galt's Gulch project kind of hit the rocks. Luke and Gabe and a couple other folks got together and decided, this was a pretty viable project. We're going to go further south. We're going to find a piece of land, and we're going to make a go of it on a smaller, more manageable scale. They ended up down in the Lakes District of Chile, which I was super excited about. I've wanted to live in that part of Chile pretty much my whole
Yeah, it
adult
li looks
life.
beautiful.
Yeah, it's just the northern edge of the Patagonia is just an amazing part of the world. And then Luke was really strongly focusing on the maker community aspects of it, and I've always really been interested in the maker movement, and so the combination of things that's just coming together has been pretty amazing. I'd been looking at starting an aquaponics business here, which is pretty cool. You're into it too. And I'd actually given a little test operation one go, and I thought, this is pretty cool. I really like this. It's really peaceful, sort of productive pastime.
Yeah, I love
I
it.
was, yeah, I was going to go commercial here. But with the issues with the corporatism, the government corporatism issue, I just can't be confident that, I could build this amazing commercial facility and then, oh, they nationalize the food supply or something like that, and I find
Which
myself
they
right
could
back
do if they
under.
wanted to.
Yeah, they could. And it looks like one industry after another is going in that direction. So, I'm going to work with, one of the other Fort Galt early adopters who I've met through the project, who's really cool. I'm really looking forward to building a commercial aquaponics facility in conjunction with the Fort Galt project right there, and we'll be start off feeding the community itself and expand the
Maybe I've been looking at the plans, and maybe you could talk them into having the centerpiece, the aquaponics system, instead of the swimming pool.
Well, yeah, the swimming pool is sort of, I think that's been it looked pretty cool, but the consensus is that more maker space, less swimming pool. So I think I'm just going to go with a
I
couple nice
agree
hot tubs or
completely.
something like
Yeah,
that.
I totally agree. I was like,
But
oh, swimming pool. Oh, geez. That
yeah, it's almost sort of it's kind of like a sort of a combination of an open source research campus and a family friendly entrepreneurial environment, and a bunch of so many other things. It's really the buzz that's going among the early adopters is just there's business idea after business idea bubbling to the surface, and it's just fantastic. So the idea of being an entrepreneur living in this environment where if you come up with a contract or a commercial idea, there's the skill sets you need are just down the hall or across the way. Is really attractive. But like you said earlier with the Chilean government, no place on the planet's perfect. Every place has got its issues. And so really, and some people in Acapulco actually spoke to this. You want to try and spread yourself out a little bit. Have a good portable skill set, at least something that you can do on the road. Keep your eyes as open as you can for political risk because, the only thing you can really count on maintaining control over is yourself and what's between your ears. So.
Yeah, the governments are always there, and so that's something I contemplate when I think about expatriation. I weigh it out. Well, am I going to have the same problems there as I'm having here?
Right.
What's the likelihood? What kind of influence can I have? One thing I have noticed is that we've gained some ground by pushing back,
Oh yeah.
especially on Second Amendment issues locally here.
Yeah,
We've
we got
we've
same out
we've
here.
we've we've massively gained some ground, on two fronts recently, and another thing too is that I encourage people to do this all the time is just don't comply.
Right.
Don't fill out the form. Don't get the license. Don't do these things. Just don't. And if you get engage in trade with like-minded people, and before you know it, you've formed a community.
And then that becomes the seed of decentralized civilization, which is where we're headed.
Right. And so this is what I try to push for. I know that where I am at right now, I could network and organize people a lot more easily than I could if I'm in a foreign country where I can't speak the language fluently. So anyway, so I just I look at my options. We've got this project in Northern California that was called the Siskiyou Republic, or the Jefferson Republic, which is now the Siskiyou Republic, and we almost created a new constitutional republic last year, lost
Pretty
by a
close.
5% margin. So we're working on this again, and it's projects like this that really, really give me hope. And I go, we can roll back government.
Oh
We've
yeah,
got a
I'm
shot at
incredibly
this.
optimistic about the future. And you know, as soon as the system that's tottering on its last legs now finishes expiring and falls over, I'll be the first one to come back here and plant the seeds of a new network on top of the old one.
There you go.
But you know, there's something to be said for a strategic withdrawal. You know, you're not running away, you're not
Yes.
cutting and running or bailing. You're just pulling back a little bit and assessing the situation. And then when the time's right, you move forward and you fix the stuff that they broke while you were gone, you know,
Right. Yeah. And maybe, the culture is different there, and maybe people don't tolerate so much government. Well, there's the bumper music right there. You have been listening to Double Cross Radio on UCY.TV. Our guest tonight was Travis Boyd from Wallowa Valley Networks. We'll be back again next Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.
Thanks, Drew.